Hi, Milton.
We're going to need to go ahead and move you downstairs into storage B.
No,
some new people coming in, and we need all the space we can get.
But there's no space.
So if you could just go ahead and pack up your stuff and move it down there, that would be terrific.
You'll figure it out. Here we go. Good morning, my friends, and welcome to another installment of Morning Reload. From high above all other pedantic and puerile forms of Wyoming mainstream media, this is Cowboy State Politics. I, of course, am your illustrious host, David Iverson, sitting behind the silver Cowboy State Politics microphone and broadcasting to you from the base of the Bighorns in beautiful Buffalo, Wyoming. This whole election, we've kind of forgotten about local races. Now, here in just a second, we're going to talk to Keith Reichert, who is running for the mayor of Dayton, Wyoming. Dayton is a little town of about 900 people and is located slightly north of Sheridan, Wyoming. It's a beautiful little place. If you travel Highway 14 over the Bighorns, you go right through Dayton. It's such a small, sleepy little town that it does sound a little bit peculiar that we'd be covering a mayoral race here on Cowboy State Politics. But there's some interesting things going on in the town of Dayton. Not that long ago, their town council voted to remove all power from their current mayor. Now, we've seen some other attempts to do something similar to this at the state legislature. If you'll recall, Representative Redcoat Bob Nicholas tried to remove all power from our state treasurer. And then, of course, there was Senate File 104 that tried to make the state superintendent of public instruction an appointed position, effectively removing their power. So this is not an unprecedented move by the Dayton Town Council, but it's certainly one that warrants a little investigation. Most of the time, the way that we remove power from an elected official is we typically vote them out of office or get them to resign somehow. But that's not what happened in Dayton. Nope, they removed all of his job responsibilities and then they moved him out of his office. In an uncharacteristically journalistic article in the Sheridan Press entitled "Dayton Mayor Relieved of Duties," written by Stephen Dow on September 6th of 2021, and I quote, "In a special meeting Thursday, the Dayton Town Council voted 4-1 to relieve Mayor Norm Anderson of many responsibilities, essentially reducing him to figurehead status. Although the move seemed sudden to many in the audience, Town Councilor Clifford Reed said the decision was a culmination of nearly 2 years of communication difficulties between the mayor and the council. Those difficulties had recently been exacerbated by some employee issues involving Anderson. Skip a couple paragraphs. Specific details of the incidents leading to the removal of the mayor's power could not be discussed without entering into executive session, according to the councilors. The changes were implemented by emergency ordinance Thursday. Typically, an ordinance is approved on 3 separate readings over several weeks, but by declaring a state of emergency, the council was able to make the ordinance limiting Anderson's powers effective immediately. The ordinance strips Anderson of all but a few of his powers. While he still will preside over council meetings and execute contracts, his other duties, from budgeting to employee oversight to setting agendas for the meetings, will be split between the town council's clerk, treasurer, HR director Henley Visser, and a newly created 2-person administrative oversight committee, which will be filled by town councilors who will serve 6-month rotations on the committee. End quote. Seems a little fishy to me. Actually, I just want to know where they put his desk. In any case, they have a mayor's race this year, and we're going to talk to one of the candidates for that office, Keith Reichert, here in just a second. But first, some totally egregious self-aggrandizement. You can listen to the podcast on any of your favorite podcasting apps, iHeartRadio, iTunes, TuneIn, really any of them will work. But the easiest way is just to go to the website, cowboystatepolitics.com. There, you can find all of the shows as well as any of the articles that I might bring up during the course of a program. If your name is Norm Anderson and you used to be the mayor of Dayton and you keep falling asleep down in Storage B, well, you can go to cowboystatepolitics.com, pull up an article, and find something to occupy your time. A couple of program notes before we really get rolling with the program. On Thursday, the 11th, I'll be live streaming a gubernatorial forum live from Cody. It begins at 8 a.m., and of course, if you're a Cowboy State Politics follower on Podbean, you'll get a notification when the event starts, but you can find the link on the website as well, and I'll post it to social media before then. And then on Saturday, August 13th, the long-awaited, most important political discussion of this election season, the debate between myself and columnist Rod Miller. Well, I don't know if it's the most important political discussion this election season, but it's definitely a good one, and I'll air that one on August 13th. You don't want to miss it. It really is a fascinating debate. This morning's broadcast is brought to you by Morton Buildings. It's almost the end of summer, and it's still construction season. And if you've been thinking about a building to put on your property, whether it's a garage or a barn or a roping arena so you can rodeo all year long, or a giant warehouse, it doesn't really matter what it is. Call Nick and Jesse at Morton Buildings, 307-674-2532. It doesn't matter what you've got in mind, what type of building you've been thinking about, just give them a call and they can handle all the details. That's 307-674-2532, or you can check them out on their website at mortonbuildings.com. The most important offices in any elections are the ones that are closest to you. The mayor, the city council, the sheriff, that's a biggie. But we often don't pay that much attention to them in favor of focusing on state legislative races and, of course, Congress. The truth is, the power that is closest to you affects your life the most. So up in Dayton, they have a choice between spending millions of dollars on their wastewater treatment plant, or they could spend a couple hundred thousand and do the same thing, except it doesn't cost a buttload of money, and it's way more efficient. Keith Reichert is the guy that came up with that plan, and he's running for the office of mayor of Dayton. We had a great discussion. Here it is. In a bit of a change, I'm talking with Keith Reichert. Keith is running for the mayor of Dayton, Wyoming, which is a small town north of Sheridan, if you don't know. Keith, welcome to Cowboy State Politics.
Thanks, Dave. Appreciate the interview.
First thing we always do on the show is, if you haven't been here before, I ask you to talk about yourself. So tell us about you. Who is Keith Reichert?
All right, Dave. Well, I was born and raised in Dayton, Wyoming. I have raised my four children there. Most of them graduated from Tongue River High School. I graduated from Tongue River High School in 1978. Made roots in Dayton after I attended several years of college in Utah. I came back home and raised my family and ended up making Dayton my permanent residence. I was born and raised there, like I said, and enjoyed Dayton. I was a young boy. I believe I moved to Dayton when I was 4 years old from Sheridan, so I wasn't a transplant from very far away, and enjoyed the community. Loved the small town feel. Love the small town happenings, the closeness of everything that goes on in Dayton, where everybody knows everything about everyone. I have been involved in the community through officiating basketball and umpiring baseball. None of that baseball happens in Dayton anymore. It did in the early days, the teens, 20s, 30s. Dayton had their own baseball team then. And I love sports, love the camaraderie that comes along with spending time with your friends as you travel the state to officiate sporting events. Love doing that. I've had the opportunity to be semi-involved with small governmental happenings in our town. And along with that, you're educated on what goes on, the comings, the goings of things that happen in your town. And my father told me a long time ago, you can do a couple different things. You can just sit back and take it and complain about it, or you can step into the front and make things happen or try to make a change for the good of the town and the community.
Okay, so that leads me to my first question, well, second question, I guess. Why in the devil are you running for mayor? I mean, you're busy with all your refereeing, all of that throughout the year. Why in the devil would you get involved in small town politics?
That's not the first time I've been asked that question, Dave.
No doubt.
People do ask that and wonder why you'd want to get involved in stuff when you have enough on your plate. I have recently retired 26 days ago. I'm into it, and I'm kind of trying to find my way around
now,
what I do.
Now, hold on, Keith. You retired once before, too.
I did. I retired 2 years ago and then came out of retirement to work a couple more years so that I could be completely out of debt when I retire and not have the worrying of any financial debt over my head. So you are correct with stating this is my second retirement, I guess. So I've taken the bull by the horns. I've seen some things that have happened in Dayton over the last decade that I really didn't feel was the direction our town needs to go, should go. And I think now at this time, I'm the guy that's ready to step into place. I've had some experience of living for the last 62 years. And I think I can apply a lot of that knowledge and experience to leading and directing by example and by learning from others what we should and shouldn't do at the town administrative level.
Okay. Well, let's talk about a couple of those things. For those of you that are unaware, the Dayton City Council pretty much took all of the power away from their current mayor. So, I mean, there are some interesting things that are happening politically in Dayton. Why don't you tell us about some of those things that are going on?
Okay. About a year ago, we had what they called an emergency ordinance in place through the town of Dayton's attorney. And with the approval and direction of the Dayton Town Council, they decided through a vote to remove all responsibilities, save conducting the town meeting, from the mayor of Dayton. This stemmed from some reasons that I am not 100% sure of, but I know it must not have been something too good in order to remove all responsibilities that he had as the Dayton mayor. Those responsibilities then have been taken up by the town council. They share those responsibilities now in usually a pair of two Dayton council members that they absorb those responsibilities as the town council members for 6 weeks, and every 6 weeks, then it changes to the other two town council members. They, in the original decision that they made, they not only stripped him of his responsibilities of the town, they also had suggested that they move him and remove him from the town office of Dayton and put him in the maintenance building to get him out of the town hall with the rest of the workers that work there. I'm not sure all of the reasons for that, but they must have had significant reason in order to propose to do that.
Well, it's kind of unprecedented because we don't really have a recall statute in the state of Wyoming. The only statute that really relates to a recall election is if you have a commission-style government. So what that means is if your town, and some communities were run this way, but if you have your town set up to where it runs sort of like a school board, well, that's a commission-style government, and that's the only recall statute that I'm aware of that in the entire state. So the situation that happened in Dayton is pretty peculiar in the sense that they stripped an elected official of all power. I mean, doesn't that strike you as a little bit odd?
It certainly does. And so there's, I'm sure, a lot more that, since it's a personnel issue, that we may never hear exactly what took place. However, we moved forward with this, and that was kind of the last straw for me. When I attended that meeting and that's what happened, that's when I started my campaign running for mayor of Dayton to give people of Dayton an alternative of what's going to be coming up in that future year, which is now in the present, that I was throwing my hat in the ring to run for mayor. And I hope they accepted that as a light at the end of the tunnel. There's still some hope, and we can get Dayton back on track for what it needs to be, which is a great town. We call it a little piece of heaven on earth, and it is. It's a beautiful town. It's located at the foot of the Bighorn Mountains, and it is just a fantastic place to live and raise your family. You kind of can have to sacrifice some opportunities in employment, and I did that as well, so I could stay in that community, raise my children there. Right now, I'm retired there, so that's where I'm at.
So it sounds to me like one of the key issues in your race is transparency of government. You're a resident of Dayton, and you have no idea what happened with the mayor. So what would you do to fix that? Fix the transparency. Let people know what's going on.
I think there's several things we could do. I've always been a guy that's worn everything out in the open, and occasionally I say maybe too much. And in this particular case, I think when you are a represented individual in government, you have that responsibility that your residents know what's going on. I understand there's some things where you have to have an executive session in some instances, but I think what we're doing in the town administratively, that needs to be available and shared with all the residents of the town. I know I go to a lot of meetings in our city, at the city council meetings, and a lot of acronyms are used, and I have no idea what they're talking about. That'd be one thing that I would make it understandable and encourage our residents to attend our town meetings. It's kind of disappointing. Our last town meeting, I don't know that we had more than six at our last town meeting. And not that it's an entertainment or something you want to do on a Monday or Wednesday night, but you need to be involved as a citizen in your town and be an active part of what takes place. My transparency would be to design and develop information we're going to be discussed at that meeting, so it's easy for anyone walking off the street to pick up an informative sheet and tell you what's going to be discussed and what procedure is going to happen, whether we're talking about budget, whether we're talking about ordinances. We need to be black and white on what it is we need to understand about the issues that the town is addressing.
I couldn't agree with you more. One of my biggest complaints in Buffalo is that you go to a city council meeting and one, they don't really discuss anything. And two, when they go to vote on it, I mean, Keith, I've probably been to 100 city council meetings. Well, maybe not that many, but a lot of them. And I have never seen one dissenting vote on anything. I mean, they all vote the same, which what that tells you is that there's some meeting at some other time where decisions are made. And most likely it's at 7:30 on a Monday when everybody else is headed to work. That's where the decisions are made. And that's not right. And it certainly looks to me like that's the case in Dayton. So if you're elected, we already talked about one thing you want to change. What else do you want to do?
We have a few projects that we're working on right now. One is our lagoon system that we're trying to upgrade. We have the total project is $5.8 million that we're looking to upgrade our wastewater system. I believe $2.4 or $2.5 million have been spent already on phase one, which was to resecure the shoreline of the Tongue River where we discharge into to prevent any flooding or any action of Mother Nature would create to lose our lagoons. We need to finish that, and I have proposed, it's probably been 6 weeks ago now, maybe seven, a plan that would probably cost our town $0.2 million to finish this project instead of the $3.3 million that they're looking to find.
There's a big difference.
There is. I do have some people that are helping me with this program. There's Mark Court from Cheyenne that has developed some cleaning systems to remove issues that we have in our lagoons, duckweed being that number one issue. He's developed a system that removes that, and then we introduce a fish It's a triploid fish, which means it's genetically altered that cannot reproduce. It's called a grass carp. And we have found that it does amazing things. We have a resident of, not really a resident of Dayton, but within a mile of Dayton, that has used this in his pond with good results. There's been many results around the nation that are going to this. And what these fish do is they're a vegetation eater. They're just a vegetarian. And they will eat three times their body weight a day. And with the size of our lagoons, we have three. If we put five fish in each lagoon, they should be able to handle the duckweed issue that we have, which if you're into wastewater, and I currently hold a level two wastewater permit, we need the sunlight to do its job. And that's our real workhorse. We don't, as operators, don't do much with lagoons. They're kind of self-sufficient. There's some things we can do to enhance that, aeration being one of those. The plan I proposed was a shallow undersurface water aeration, which is probably one of the biggest helpmates that we can use in wastewater. And then with the introduction of fish, which is called a grass carp, it will help remove the rest of the blooms. And so not only do they eat the bloom of it as well, they also eat the seeds. And so then we have a twofold purpose of the fish. They eat it off the top, eat it off the bottom.
I can tell right now, Keith, that you're just not qualified for government. I mean, you're saving money instead of spending it.
I would like to do that. And if we don't save it, and if we spend the money through a loan that may have some forgiveness to it, and probably not much, we're always looking for free money. And there's no such thing as free money. Someone is paying for it somewhere. And if we don't use it, we lose it. And we all hear that statement. I would like to save our town budget and reward our city citizens with lower utilities for our town. If this were to go into place, this would be an immediate at least $26 to $30 a month onto your utility bill in the town of Dayton. And if we could prevent that, we have a lot of people on fixed incomes, as every community does, but this gives the opportunity for people to keep a little more money in their pocket and spend it where they want to instead of to upgrade on things that I see we really don't need. Along with that upgrade, they want to put in a disinfection basin, which if you're familiar, not a lot of people like to talk about wastewater, but
I'm on the board of the dump. Okay.
Okay.
I hang out with trash.
Okay. So. Well, this is a different type of trash, but it's all carbon-based. So in this procedure, and this is one of the biggest costs that we have going in the upgrade in our wastewater system is the disinfection system. So they would install a disinfection basin, and they would inject or add to this disinfection basin chlorine, which we know is the disinfectant all for everything. After it's disinfected for a certain period of time, which is read by meters gauges, then before that liqueur is what it's called, is discharged into the river, that wastewater must be dechlorinated. So then we're using sulfur dioxide to remove it. In a conversation recently with DEQ, I asked them specifically, does it matter how we get our numbers that are legal to discharge? And they said, absolutely not. We just need to know what your numbers are as you discharge in order to be legal and meet the standards of the state, which it is state regulated. So I told them of my plan of the fish and to eliminate the chemicals that we have to put in of chlorine and then removed with sulfur dioxide and then discharge that water. If we can replace those steps without adding chemicals and then removing chemicals by adding more chemicals, it's much safer. The gentleman I visited with at DEQ said, I wish more people would let and use the natural way to combat this this natural event.
See, there's the second disqualification for getting into local politics, Keith. You're trying to make things simple. You know, you're not overcomplicating things.
And if we can use what's natural and good, I'm all for it. And it's safer. Chlorine, as you know, comes in a lot of different forms. It can come in tablets. It can come in gas. It can come in liquid form. I don't know the statistics on that, but there's injuries every year by handling chlorinated stuff. Liquid chlorine, I believe it boils at like 270 degrees below zero. So it's a very cold chemical. I've seen some individuals in some of the work conferences I've attended who've been burned, froze, which they refer to mm-hmm. as a burn, where they lose a lot of skin in a short amount of time. So it's not the safest practice. They obviously teach you how to be careful with it and to do it. Then we come across what we're dealing with right now. You know, if we're still sitting and waiting for things to come out of the Bay of California because it's not, we don't have anyone at the Bay to offload these services we need or these chemicals we need, then what do we have? We have no way to disinfect or to proceed with this project. But if it's all natural, they can park their boats in the ocean for as long as they want, and it won't affect our lagoon system in Dayton, Wyoming.
Let me ask you sort of a different question. You worked for the school district for how many years?
38 years.
38 years. Well, one of the biggest problems we have in the state is our education funding. And it's not that we don't have enough money or that we need revenue. We don't have a revenue problem. We have a spending problem. It's the estimation of some legislators that if we don't get a handle on our education spending within the next 6 years or so, we could potentially bankrupt the state. So you were at the school for 30 years. If you were in charge, how would you tackle education spending?
Well, this is kind of out of my realm, but being there for 38 years, I've seen a lot of spending in 38 years. When I can tell you when I first started working for the school district, I made $6.90 an hour as an employee in the custodial department. There was at one point in my career where I finished that responsibility, and I was probably near the $80,000 annual pay. I appreciated.
Sure.
But I can tell you that I, through my custodial services, I threw away a lot of books. Not saying that things need to be updated, but I can tell you that I threw away some books that had my signature in the front of the book. From when I graduated in 78, that was prior to that. We have elected officials in the school board, and I think they need to spend some time a little deeper on the inside of the comings and goings of the school. I believe our individuals who manage the money need to have a greater awareness of where that money goes and how it's spent. I was trained and learned on how to use a five-year plan. There's some things that can't wait 5 years, and there's some things that extend way beyond the five-year plan. I have a lot of friends in the education department, and I'm not sitting in a position, I guess, in the financial part of the school system to really understand the comings and goings of finances. I know it changed a lot when I first started, when I plowed snow and removed it at 20 or 30 below degrees and the wind blowing on a tractor with no cab. And I had a tractor that had a blade that was not able to angle, and so you pushed one direction, and I started at 3 a.m. in the morning and finished about 10 a.m. I was a frozen snowman by the time I got out of there, and I know now we're able to use some funds and buy equipment that make our job easier and more efficient at that level.
So let me tell you why I asked you that question. It seems to me that school boards and town governments suffer from the same malady. And that is that we just throw money at a problem and assume that it's going to solve the problem. And the secondary symptom of what we're suffering from is that, and you mentioned it, when we have money, we have to spend it. So one of the biggest challenges that all small Wyoming towns face is their budget. So what would you do to get costs in line as it relates to the Dayton city budget or the Dayton town budget?
Okay. One thing I've learned, I guess, from just sitting in on the town meetings is what our priorities are. It needs to be people with boots on the ground with the experience of working and seeing what is needed other than what is perceived by the community of what is needed. And I think that's where you have to really involve those who are involved directly, whether it be your maintenance department, what is really necessary to make you have an efficient and an effective way to work and to finish your job. You know, it could be equipment, it could be more manpower. What are the needs you need to have? And I think working from my perspective of job experience, I see how it's perceived by different angles, whether you're administration or whether you are the actual laborer in that position. I think sometimes it's seen from two separate perspectives. And so you're able to, at least from my perspective, you see things that pertain directly to you on what needs to be done and how it needs to be done. Sometimes you have administrators that tell you, we'll give you this because this is better for you. And I don't think that's always the most accurate and efficient way to make things work, because we have X amount of money, you're going to get X amount of stuff and you're going to like it because this is what's going to work. But if we have people making those decisions, or at least those people having input on how that money is spent, that's going to make a big difference.
All right, Keith, if people want to get a hold of you, how do they do that?
You can call me. I'll give you my cell phone, and that's been a thing that people have said you're crazy for giving that number out. But you can call me on my cell phone, and that's area code 307-751-3749. Or you can email me at keith373-1960@gmail.com. I'll respond to any message or contact that you want to give me. If you want to visit in person on the phone, I'd be happy to visit with you about my search for a better town and a better way to live in Dayton, Wyoming.
All right. Well, Keith, I appreciate you taking the time to visit with me, and good luck on your race.
Thank you, Dave. Appreciate it.
Well, that'll do it for this installment of Morning Reload. Have a good week, and we'll talk again on Wednesday. Now, don't forget about the two program notes that I gave you in the beginning. We're going to be live streaming the August 11th gubernatorial forum that's being held in Cody, and then on Saturday, August 13th, my debate with Rod Miller. You don't want to miss it. From the base of the Bighorns in beautiful Buffalo, Wyoming, I'm David Iverson, and this is Cowboy State Politics.